Hey everyone, we're back and welcome into another edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast right here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush with you. And Phil, I want to start with the good news since we kind of left it as a cliffhanger in the last episode. I want to say congrats on a new addition to the Marquette family.
Yeah, we were able to announce a winger for the 2037 recruiting class at Marquette. My wife and I had our son Owen Gerald on Wednesday the 18th. It was about the only good news we had all week considering the Marquette results.
Well, I'm very happy for you guys, so congratulations. I'm just sad that Owen has entered into a world where Marquette is apparently not very good at basketball.
Yes.
Which is what we saw last week. As we talk about these amateur athletes, you know, I try to keep it generally positive on the show. There's just not a whole lot of positive to take from the team three games in, so we have a lot to kind of go over, and considering the holidays are coming up, Phil, I think I have a holiday theme. Unfortunately, it's Festivus, so we're going to begin with the airing of grievances.
Fantastic. I'll get my poll out.
Yeah, all right, so we'll have that. I have a laundry list of things to go over that we've seen with the team in the first three games, particularly the Iowa game, which pretty much melted down Twitter, and I will not deny I was contributing to that for sure. So we're just going to kind of go over, and some of these points will kind of flow one into the other. And Phil, I guess I'll start with the most obvious point, and it's the issue that most people complain about and even the most amateur basketball fan can complain about with this team, and that would be the threes. My goodness, the threes. This team, boy, it seems like a lot of these guys on this team think they are Steph Curry, and they are far from it.
Well, there's two aspects to the threes. One, I mean, they're just bad at shooting them. Clearly, they're just bad. I mean, this is year three of Juwan Johnson trying to be a three-point shooter, and I think we can call case closed on the corner three from JJ, as it's just not a thing we should be doing.
In his defense, he only shot one in the Iowa game.
He shot just about the fewest threes. Yeah. There's two things to it. It's the frequency with which they're being jacked, and two, it's that they're not making them. At some point, I mean, they're missing so many threes. Some of them are contested, and some of them are good shots, but they're missing so many that it packs. Like, the defenses just go, clearly you're off. I'm not gonna bother with you shooting them. Take them all night, and it affects everything else.
Yeah, like, it just, they kind of get in a mode where, all right, you know, they're down three. Well, here's a three. Okay, they miss. All right, now we're down five. Here's another three. All right, now we're down 12. I'm gonna fire one from 30. And it just looks worse and worse, and it just kind of snowballs. And they're especially in the first few minutes of that game against Iowa, I think they started 3 of 11 in that game, and 3 for 3 in the paint, 0 for 8 from downtown. And I think that's what really got people's heads just spinning out of control. It's like, why aren't they going in the paint right now?
Well, I mean, if you look at the KenPom numbers, their two-point percentage, they're 41st in the country at 56.3%. I mean, so they can hit shots inside the arc. That one would argue they should probably take some of those three-point shots that they might take, drive in a little bit, and if nothing else, settle for a mid-range jumper. The other part of this is the new rules should favor them getting to the hole. They should be able to drive with more gusto, and if not get all the way to the hoop, pull up for a jumper. This complete inability to recognize that the three-point shot is not going to win it, and it's much more likely to lose it for him, is kind of maddening.
Yeah, I mean, talk about going inside. You know, KenPom kind of break, for those of you who aren't on KenPom, kind of breaks down at the bottom of each team's page which guys are used the most and which guys play the most. Obviously, Henry Ellenson is at the top for Marquette, but he's listed as a go-to guy, which is more than 28% of possessions used. But you have to go down three spots to role players to where you find Luke Fisher, which is 16 to 20% of possessions used. And I think he should be much higher than a quote-unquote role player, shouldn't you? Considering it's not like his minutes have been limited that much by fouls, which maybe they were a little bit in the Iowa game, but he's played 72% of the minutes. He only trails Sandy Cohen and Henry Ellenson in that number.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was going to say the Iowa game, he was hampered. He had three fouls in the first half and fouled out with 9 minutes to go. So he had some issue there. But it's more about, it's not even the minutes, the amount of minutes that Luke Fisher is playing, it's the quality of possessions that he's getting. It is starting to be a theme that Marquette seems either unwilling or unable to feed the post. This was something I had always pinned on Derek Wilson and his inability to feed the post. But there are times, certainly with Luke Fisher, sometimes with Henry, where they have fought for position. They're calling for the ball down low, and one of the guards, you know, looks at them, thinks they're going to make a pass, and then decides not to, and we pass it back around the perimeter. Why not feed the post and just go to work?
Yeah, it's easy to say sitting from our chairs doing the podcast, but it just seems like there is a lack of effort getting it into the post, and it just they should try a little more. It seems like they are just way too content to just chuck up a three, and you know, especially when they're down double digits, as if they make it from 25, it's going to be worth four. That it's just not helping things, and that's what I think just what contributes to so much of frustration. And I, you know, again, it's easy to say sitting here on a podcast, but to me, there is just not nearly enough effort to get the ball in there. And we, even during one of those timeouts during the Iowa game, you know, where they go, Mike, you know, they go sound full on Wojo as he's in the post, and that was one of the things he said after the, I think probably the second TV timeout. He's in there saying, guys, the ball has got to go inside first, and we've got to stop settling for jumpers. And they didn't change much after that, though, which was disappointing.
Well, and that was one of the things you mentioned, Twitter melting down, which I was certainly in there stoking coal into the engine of that meltdown. But, you know, one of the kind of what I will say the folks that were being quote-unquote positive in a negative way, but what, you know, the recurring argument was, well, Wojo is a fine coach or whatever. He's not the one out there taking the shots. The players are. But, I mean, some of this has to be on coaching. Either it's not being emphasized enough, or if it is being emphasized, the players aren't listening to him, or, you know, he's just, you know, doesn't have the ability to make the change as, you know, three games into the season, you know, we won't be too dramatic, but he's not making the changes appropriate, you know, like during the Iowa game, especially when it was out of control and down 20, 22 points, you know, just simply say, next person who takes a three, you're on the bench for the rest of the game.
And that was one of the things that I definitely wanted to hit on in this podcast today, is a growing concern of how good a coach Wojo is. And I think it's way too early, and certainly this season and overall his career as a coach, to really just hit the panic button and say this guy can't coach. It would be very hard for me to accept the fact that he spent 15 years sitting next to Coach K and never picked up anything on coaching. I really think he's going to be a good coach. But the evidence early on is just not in his favor. And I would say, again, we're only three games in, and this team could turn things around sooner rather than later, I hope. But based on what we have seen right now, I have to say there's one of two things going on. Either A, he's not coaching them well enough, and he even mentioned that in post-game press conference. He said, I just didn't get these guys ready to play. So that's either one thing. Or two, as you said, Phil, the guys just aren't listening. But even then, I can't give him a total pass if that's the issue. Like, how long would Coach K or Tom Izzo or Bill Self or John Calipari tolerate, you know, teams, you know, doing the exact opposite of what they are telling them to do? I think, you know, guys like that, they would rip those guys right off the floor. And if it means they're throwing out walk-ons to get embarrassed for a few minutes just to make a point, I think they would do that.
Absolutely. And that's, and you know, Dwayne Wilson had a ton of minutes. And again, I agree with you in the, that we want to be positive and these are amateur college athletes, but Dwayne Wilson had just a case of three-point-itis. And he was the culprit more than anyone else of just jacking threes. Yes, some of them were open, but it was, he was forcing shots. Why did he get the second most minutes in the Iowa game? At some point, you've got to be like, seriously, we can't have this. Yeah, get to the rack.
Dwayne is in a horrible shooting funk right now. He's a much better shooter than he's shown through three games. But through three games, he is 4 of 23 from three. That is 17.4%, kids. That is not good. And somebody asked it in the post-game press conference, and I don't know who asked it, but I appreciate them asking it. It was the simple question to Wojo is, at some point, you just tell him to stop shooting threes? Wojo kind of danced around the question and said, yeah, I mean, it was bad out there. But in Dwayne's case, you know, when you're, you know, 0 for 6, 1 for 8, something like that, at some point, you just got to say, look, I don't have it tonight. It's just not going down, and I'm killing my team. I'm shooting him into a grave, and yeah, he's a better shooter than he's shown, but right now Dwayne is not good shooting the ball, and he has to figure out something else.
Yeah, well, and you know, this is the other part that goes to the coaching, and it wasn't really addressed in the presser, is what Wojo's looking to do, is he looking for, I mean, because this, let's be honest, this is where basketball is going, certainly in the NBA and somewhat in college, that fast pace and spread, kind of spread offenses where you're taking three-point shots a lot. If that's the offense Wojo wants to run, okay, that's fine, but does he have the players for it? And
I don't think so.
I don't think he does.
I think the only guy on this team who I would consider a decent shooter from three right now would be Sandy Cohen. And again, the numbers are kind of small at this point, but he's 5 of 13 on the year, which is 38%, 39%. That's decent. You take that. Henry Ellenson was supposedly a pretty good shooter in high school, and I still think he's going to be a good shooter as his career develops. But right now, I mean, he's at 15% from the year. Again, small sample size, 2 of 13, but Ellenson, I think we would all agree from what we've seen through three games from Henry, he's so good. He's so much better down there in the post than he is from three. And when he settles for a jumper, you're just kind of like, ugh.
Well, and so I guess I would ask you your opinion. Are the threes, or the way the offense is running, is this what Wojo's envisioning and they're just not, Because, again, some of the threes, let's be fair to them, at least, and this is an entirely made-up number, but just from anecdotal watching the games, I'd bet at least 50% of the threes were open looks or were good looks.
Yeah, I would say I'm trying to separate the strategy from the result here.
Right.
And because obviously the results were bad. I don't think even with the bad early results, I still don't think Wojo would have looked at this roster and said we're going to be a good 3-point shooting team.
You would hope.
Even coming in, I don't think he would have said that. Because, we could take out the recent results. Even coming into the season, I wouldn't have looked at really anyone on the team and said we have a shooter. Like a really legit shooter. Next year, we will, when Rousey is on the roster and eligible to play. And when Sam Hauser is on the team as a true freshman. I think then we would have a couple really good shooters. But the roster in its current form, I still don't look at anyone on the roster and say, that's our shooter. We need a three. We need to get it to that guy. So, yeah, I find it hard to believe that the three-point shooting is part of the strategy. It's just a perimeter-oriented team where they want to go outside all the time. I think Wojo, for the most part, wants to go inside and just, you would think with two guys who are close to 7 feet, you want to get inside first, and then if that creates an open look from three, then take it. There's no one on the team I would consider a 3-point shooter. There are a handful of guys who I would say, if you're open, take the shot.
Right.
And Dwayne is in that category. Sandy Cohen's in that category. And even though his early returns aren't great, Henry Ellenson is in that category. If he's got plenty of space behind, the arc, I would consider him. I'd be good with him shooting a three too. But a very small sample size for Cheatham. He's only 2 of 5, but still that's 40%. So that's really good. But yeah, guys, there are plenty of guys who, if it's an open look, if it comes off a paint touch, and then you got an open look, sure, take the three. But again, it's hard separating the strategy from the results right now because the results have been so poor.
Well, and I think the very last thing you said about paint touch is one of the optimal statements. Again, anecdotally, it appears a lot of the threes are coming off of either screens on the perimeter or passing around the perimeter. They're not coming off of somebody driving and kicking or someone feeding the post, and then when they double down, the post feeding back out. Those, if that's how you're missing threes, I don't have any problem with it.
Right.
That's one of those things where you go, well, geez, luck's just not on our side, or it's an off shooting night. This is strategic or tactical decisions that just really, really make me question what's going on.
This is a new stat that I think I want to just make up myself, and I don't have any number, but how many possessions were chuck possessions?
Yes.
Where all they did was chuck it. Whatever the number was, it was too high for me.
Yes.
And I think too high for everyone else. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at, is if they work the ball inside a little more to Luke Fisher and Henry Ellenson, then I think they will get more open looks and more shots will fall. And as Anonymous Eagle did point out, they actually shot 50% in the second half. So if you want to take that for what it's worth. I mean, it was, you know, maybe Iowa had called off the dogs and they had more looks in the second half, and there were definitely some that fell there in garbage time. But I kind of look at that, Phil, as like myself on the 17th tee, you know, after I've been shanking it all day and I'm about 100 shots in, and then I hit that perfect drive right down the middle and I say, oh, now I've got it.
Right.
No, Joe, no, you don't got it.
No.
Those first 16 or 17 holes, that's you.
Yes.
That's who you are. You don't go by the fluke. Go by the larger sample size. So even though the numbers were favorable in garbage time against Iowa, this is still not a three-point shooting team, and I hope they don't come out against LSU thinking they are.
Well, and you know, not to go Debbie Downer, but we can rag on the three-point shooting because it's the most obvious issue with this team. But even if, you know, let's say in that Iowa game, Marquette was shooting threes at, you know, an average, a league-wide average of, say, 33%, they still would have lost by 18 points.
Mm-hmm.
So
it means there are other issues other than three.
Something larger than three-point shooting. Now, it feeds other things. You take a bad three, you give up a long rebound that goes to the other team, and maybe they, you know, they get a run out and score easy buckets in transition, stuff like that. So they're all integrated, but there's other significant issues, not just three-point shooting.
And I think probably near the top of that list, Phil, has to be the defense.
Yes.
Again, early returns and small sample size, but this team really can't guard a bar stool right now, especially if the bar stools can run a pick and roll.
Yeah,
because they get lost on pick and roll a lot. There's a lot of pick and pop. I mean, wide open shots coming off pick and pop that they're just not getting there.
Well, and it's just so many basic open looks basketball. It's like clinical, like why don't we hang a peach basket type of basketball.
Yeah, and boy, I would think the rim protection would be a little bit better with a couple guys 6'10 in there. But, I mean, they're not blocking any shots. I mean, the opposing defenses are getting the big guys out of position and just driving right to the basket for easy layups if they're not getting open jumpers. So, yeah, I think the team is a little lost defensively. And maybe is that youth? Is that lack of skill? I mean, would you break down the defense?
I think it's – and this is where kind of feeds my concern over the coaching narrative, which I've had concern over all along. That was my big question mark going into the season. But, like, if you look at Tracy Carter, watching him on the perimeter guard someone – he's a fast, quick guy. He's athletic, and there are guys just blowing by him. I think the technique is off. Mm-hmm. I think there's some fundamental flaws either in the way they want to play defense or how they're being taught to play defense, and that speaks to coaching in my mind.
Yeah, I do think they, and I will give Wojo a little bit of credit in that as he did last year, he abandoned the man-to-man stuff and went to his zone, and that's really the main reason they were able to hang on and beat IUPUI last week. And I think maybe that's something he's probably looking at this weekend as he tries to figure out how the heck they're going to beat LSU or basically just get out of New York with any win at all. Maybe do you think they just get back to the zone and even though that's not what he wants to do, just kind of accept that he's not a good man, the team is not a good man-to-man team right now?
I think he has to. If he said repeatedly that he wants to play almost exclusively man-to-man. That's his strategy, which, okay, that's fine. But he better have a darn short leash on that strategy. Mm-hmm. If LSU starts tearing them up, they better go zone right away. You know, which isn't going to work for every team. I mean, the concern you have, you know, maybe it works against LSU, but maybe not, because LSU is shooting 38% from three, which, you know, is kind of a weakness for a 2-3 zone. He's got to make some decisions that put his players in a position to be, at a minimum, be competitive. Because let's be honest, that Iowa game, it was not only was it tied for the worst loss in home Marquette history, it's got to be the worst loss I've seen, especially given the hype and the expectations I've seen since I've been watching Marquette.
Yeah, you know, Andre over at Paint Touches actually wrote a column.
I'm
to
glad
that
you
effect.
Referenced this. I thought it was a great column.
Yeah, it was really good. And basically, the gist of it was, you know, Marquette's had some embarrassing losses in the past. He cited the Vanderbilt loss, which was at home the year they went to the Elite Eight, right? And that was kind of early in the season. But the point that he made that I thought was really good was the reason this one is a little more concerning is we don't have a real previous sample size from this group, whereas, say, that Vanderbilt disaster, we said, look, they just played a terrible game. We've seen a lot from Jay Crowder and Darius Johnson-Odom and Vander Blue in the past. They're going to get better. They just need to get whipped into shape, and they did, and they rebounded, and they got much better. We just haven't seen, aside from playing a bunch of nobodies in Italy, we really have not seen this team play at any kind of a high level, and we're just overall concerned that this is what they are, and they're not going to get any better. I think that's what's causing the angst. I don't think that's the case. I certainly hope like crazy that they're going to get a lot better, but we just haven't seen this team play together at a high level at all.
Well, be honest, it Buzz Williams, for all his flaws in that Vanderbilt game, which is a great example, or even say Tom Crean in that Western Michigan nightmare in the home NIT game where they just got slaughtered after Travis Diener had an incident with the tackling dummy, so to speak.
Allegedly.
Nobody can prove anything. Those two losses, you did have a proven sample size, A, from the coach, and B, from the teams generally. Right now, the coaching staff, we have no idea if they can actually coach because they got a pass for last season, totally merited. I get it. But this season, and I think Andre did a good job also of saying that, Henry really doesn't do Wojo any favors this year because he creates all these expectations that may not be serviceable.
And that's the thing that we've touched on before is when you bring in a one and done, the key thing there is the one, because the overall sense is Marquette is going to get one shot to make a run at the Final Four with Henry Ellenson. I know that's crazy to talk about Final Four, but that's the feeling. When you get a one and done, you want to go as far as you can with this guy because you only got one shot with him. And so that's what's creating kind of the angst is that, we only got one shot with Henry Ellenson and we're going to spend it in the NIT if we're lucky. And so I think that's the expectations are raised. So, we've got this one and done. He's an NBA lottery pick. He's certainly going to make it, help us get to the tournament. And then we just take our chances from there and see what happens. But, when you look as bad, for lack of a better word, as Marquette has in the first three games, it's kind of like, we're going to waste our one shot with Henry Ellenson here. And that's the bummer.
Well, yeah, and that's even kind of what I would term the short term is, how are we going to win a game in non-conference against anyone of quality competition? Yeah. The medium term is, all right, are we going to just waste Henry Ellenson's 1 year? Though, some of that, Henry hasn't necessarily shown that he deserves to be a one and done, but that doesn't mean he won't be.
Right.
But, that's kind of the medium term. Are we going to waste this year? And then the other part is, again, because we don't have any previous years that we can show Wojo and this staff to be a good staff, the long term is, what if 3-4 years down the road it turns out he can really recruit, but he can't work coach for crap?
Right.
And now all of a sudden you're looking at the potential where Marquette's fallen off. You get a couple of losing seasons. And Marquette could be in some difficulty where their next hire after Wojo would have to be kind of a home run hire to really build the program back.
Yeah, and we're looking way down a dark road that we hope we're not going to travel down. But I think that's what
feeds the angst.
That's where the concerns are looking down that road, and I hope we don't go anywhere near far down that road. But that's just kind of where you're looking when you have no basis to convince yourself, well, this team's going to be just fine. We really don't have anything that's going to convince us that this team is just we are hoping that they are. And they're young, and they're hopefully going to get better. Since you brought up Henry Ellenson, three games in, a lot of good and some concern with, I would say, the way Henry's played. You mentioned he hasn't exactly played like a one-and-done. And I would say, certainly you see the talent, though. You see, especially the way he rebounds. He's rebounded at a high level, I think, in the first three games he's played. But I certainly think a part of the where, one part where he struggles, certainly, one-on-one on the perimeter, if he's going to try and blow by someone, that hasn't gone well for him. And certainly teams have now figured it out. When Henry gets the ball in the post, you just double him. And a lot of times, unfortunately, when they dump it into Henry, it seems like the team's just kind of watching, waiting for him to turn water into wine, and the offense kind of stops while he has the ball, and so there's no one, you know, moving anywhere to get an open look.
Yeah,
we talked about earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Well, and it has been a little bit of the ball kind of stops when it goes into Ellenson's hand, which, okay, that's fine if he's creating off of that ball stopping. If he's either scoring or shooting a three goes in, or he's, you know, driving and creating opportunities for other players. But it seems like Ellenson gets the ball in anywhere where it's an attacking position, he's either taking the shot and it's going in, or it's probably getting missed.
Yeah, or turned over. I expect every time he touches the ball that there are going to be two or three Tigers all over him, and you know the rest of the team has to be ready for that. And hopefully Henry's can get a very high assist rate in that LSU game or the Arizona State NC State game, whatever is the one after that. But yeah, I think, to be clear, I don't think Henry's a bust or anything.
No, I think he's a great player.
And I think he's going to help Marquette win a lot of games this year. But I'm not sure he's been put in the best position to succeed early on, because I think he's getting doubled and he really doesn't have many options to go to when he does get doubled. And we've seen a couple times late in the game. We saw at the end of the Belmont game, at the end of the IUPUI game. Basically all it was drawn up was for Henry to take his guy one-on-one. And one time he drew a charge and the other time he turned it over. So hopefully, you know, I don't think going one-on-one trying to dribble, take a guy off the dribble, especially a quicker guard, is going to be his strength. Now, if he can get that guy down on the post, then that's his strength. I think if he can get a guy one-on-one in the post, then that is where Henry is at his best. And if he's taking a guy off the dribble who is his size, that is one of his strengths. But I would fully expect that LSU is going to put Ben Simmons on Henry.
Well, that'll be the interesting matchup, right? I mean, that among other things will give us an idea of how good Henry Ellenson is.
Yeah.
And Ben Simmons, you know, conversely, we'll get an idea of what their comparative talent levels are and what the comparative levels of the teams. Because one of the other things, kind of transitioning a little bit, one of the other things that kind of was floating around, you had the folks on Twitter and on social media that were kind of what I would term the positives. They were saying, hey, it's not, you know, yeah, this was a terrible game, but it's not all bad and kind of things. And then you had the real negative folks and stuff like that. But one of the things the positives kept pointing to was experience. This is just a very inexperienced team, and that we played three very experienced teams in Belmont, IUPUI, and Iowa. And I get that, and I don't think it's a terrible argument, but what will be interesting is, according again to Ken Palm, now that we got a subscription, we'll just quote them all the time.
This podcast brought to you by Ken Palm.
but one of the stats they track is essentially relative experience. In relative experience, Marquette is 330th in the country.
That would be low.
Oh, what's that?
That's pretty low
at what he terms 0.89 years of relative experience. Number 329, LSU. So this game will be very interesting, Marquette versus LSU, because that quote-unquote experience factor should, you know, and LSU even has a relatively new coaching staff. Mm-hmm. So this should be a good comparative of A, talent, and B, coaching. Who has it and who doesn't?
And I will say this about the talent of LSU. Jay Billis, who is, I think, one of the best analysts in all of sports broadcasting,
really.
He is not one for hyperbole and overhyping someone. He said last week that watching Ben Simmons play is like watching LeBron play in high school.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem.
So, again, that's not Dickie V saying something crazy. That's Jay Billis. He said, Jay Bell said, watching Ben Simmons play reminds him of when he watched LeBron play at St. Vincent St. Mary. So Ben Simmons is as legit as they come. And yeah, he is going to be a nightmare matchup on Monday. My hopes aren't high for that game just because Simmons is that good, and I'm not sure who's going to guard him for Marquette, if anyone. I know they're going to try. I think they're just going to have to zone up and hopefully make him settle for jumpers, and maybe that's not his strength, but he can shoot jumpers too. So. But I agree with your overall point, though, is that what we've been able to use youth as an excuse, one excuse in the first few games, And even though it didn't really fly, Wojo even said after the game, he goes, I'm sick of talking about youth. I don't want to talk about youth and use it as an excuse anymore. So I guess we're not going to use it as an excuse in this game because LSU is just as young as Marquette is. So that factor, as far as a reason why Marquette could lose, is out the window. Now, other factors are still at play. The three-point shooting, the defense, the coaching, those are all things that that are still – we need to be shown that they can turn it around before we can get optimistic about anything that's going to happen this week in New York.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. I mean, Wojo's press conference, it was kind of – there were a few folks that were upset that he was bagging on the team, you know, in a press conference. And I kind of go, he's got to say those things. I mean, that loss was so terrible. I would have been supremely disappointed if he had come out and said, listen, we're playing hard. We're going to get a few things corrected and we'll be on our way. He had to come out and say
– to Wojo, yeah.
You know, that's on me. My bad, guys. Okay, so then that's great. I appreciate it. But to quote a comedy routine you and I are fond of from Chris Rock, you're supposed to do those types of things.
That's what you're supposed to. But yeah, to Wojo's credit, he looked embarrassed after that game. Yeah, I mean he was frustrated. He was embarrassed. You know he didn't want to do that press conference, but he had to because it's his job and he has to answer the questions instead of putting the kids out there and making them answer for it. I don't know if the players even spoke after the game.
I don't believe they did.
But if they were, it certainly wasn't posted on Twitter that I saw. But when he did not want to, but to his credit, he did, and he also did not completely throw his team under the bus. He took responsibility for it. Say, look, I just didn't have our guys ready to play. That's not a way of Marquette. But you know, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall.
I want to know how many whiteboards died in the post-game discussion.
And how many suicides were run Friday through Sunday at Marquette. Because, you know, he's got to figure out something. And hopefully, I'm not really predicting they get any wins in New York against LSU or their next opponent, to be clear. But I am expecting something to change for the positive, whether they totally change their philosophy on defense, they make a strong effort to get the ball in the post first and try to establish Luke Fisher before they start jacking up threes. Because if they come out and start, you know, 1 of 10 from the floor, including 0 of 8 from 3, I'm probably going to turn that off pretty quickly and just watch Fargo.
Yeah, well, and I may, in fact, uninstall Twitter from my phone just to really make sure I don't go down, don't go into a deep, dark place.
Yeah, but we've hit on most of the points I wanted to hit on in this podcast as far as the issues with Marquette. I mentioned it briefly, but I did want to say at least one positive I want to take away. I think Juwan Johnson is maturing a little bit. He is one of the few guys in that Iowa game that actually did go to the basket more often than he settled for jumpers. And if he can set that example as, I can't believe I'm saying this, a veteran on the team, which is what he is.
He's the only one.
He's the only guy who played minutes for Buzz Williams. Everyone else was either redshirting or not on the team when Buzz Williams was the coach. So, yeah, he is the veteran on the team. And at least he is setting that example of attacking the basket, and I think he is. You mentioned earlier as far as him as a 3-point shooter, something to get away from. At least in the Iowa game, for the most part, he did.
Yeah,
he had one open look from three. He took it; it didn't fall. But overall for the night, he was 5 of 10. So, if you were looking for a glimmer of hope, something positive to take away, I think Juwan Johnson is maturing a little bit.
Well, and the other positive I would take away is, you know, after probably Monday night, the games on the schedule in non-conference get considerably easier.
As much as we complained about the non-con schedule, I'm actually glad that some cupcakes are coming, because if they had a schedule like, say, Georgetown's, they'd be below 500 when Big East played.
Yeah, and maybe just a shell from a psyche standpoint. Yeah. I mean, they very well may be at this point. Who knows? You know, if they come out and get just, you know, boat raced by LSU, you know, I don't know what that does to a very young, inexperienced team and a young, inexperienced coaching staff. That just would not be good.
Yeah, one other point that I jotted down that I at least want to mention that we didn't get to. How do you feel about the point guard spot 3 games in?
Not not very good.
Yeah, you know, because I like what I see from Cheatham athletically. I still think he's playing out of position when he's at the point guard spot. He had gosh, he had 7 turnovers against Iowa. Boy, that's a lot. Athletically, I love the guy, and I think he's going to be a very good player. I just think he's playing out of position, out of necessity. And we have kind of mentioned Tracy Carter and kind of his issues. You know, he loves to shoot, and boy, he turns it over himself. So Dwayne is probably better off the ball. So I'm just not sure what the answer is at point guard for this team right now.
Well, I still have faith in Wojciechowski as the leader of this team and as the coach. But this is another one I put on the coaching staff a little bit. We knew what we had going into the season from a point guard standpoint in terms of who was on the roster. And maybe they tried and they just couldn't get anyone to bite. But how you don't go after a JUCO point guard or somebody with – or a transfer point guard, somebody with – even if it's – you know, even if you can't get the top-tier player and you have to get the second-tier point guard, having somebody with experience at the point guard position, which would help feed the post, I think is a critical miss. Because I agree that Tracy Carter and Hanif Cheatham have a lot of talent, and it's apparent. It's just so unrefined that it doesn't help us right now.
Yeah. I want to say they did go after a player or two as far as grad transfers. They just didn't get anybody. But yeah, it would have been nice to have at least one guy, an experienced ball handler, a game manager, if you will, even if he's not going to score a lot. Just a guy you could throw in there, and you're going to trust him to not turn the ball over for a little bit. A guy like, to be honest, Derek Wilson.
Oh, God, I knew you were going to say it.
But honestly, would he be the worst thing for this team? Probably not.
Well, he couldn't shoot the three any worse than we are.
I suppose, and at least he would have played well defensively. But
yes.
Can't cry over spill. I mean, that's in the past. But again, I'm hoping to see something. I don't know what I'm expecting to see, but I'm hoping they can figure out something at the point guard spot. But my biggest hope for this Legends Classic coming up on Monday and Tuesday for Marquette is just that something changed for the positive. And my biggest hope is that the Iowa game was rock bottom, that they're never going to play worse than that. I know there are more losses coming. I'm totally accepting and cool with that. I know there are more losses coming. But I just hope that's rock bottom, and that will be the worst game they play all year, and that they can at least take little steps forward, even if they go 0-2 New York, which is I am totally expecting, that they can at least say, all right, at least we played a little better. At least, you know, we made an effort to get it inside. At least maybe the man-to-man worked, or maybe we got more comfortable in his own defense. So that's what I'm kind of hoping for and looking for at this Legends Classic.
Yeah, it's just looking, and this is kind of telling considering where our expectations were before the season started. But yeah, I agree that we're basically saying, guys, just show us you have some capability of being better. And to be fair to the team, again, it is, I kind of went through and debunked it, but there is a lack of experience, and we're 3 games in to a very long season. They can do lots of improving, and this is just a really, this is kind of the backwards way you would want a non-conference schedule set up, where you're playing a lot of tough, intelligent, veteran teams early, and then playing a bunch of cupcakes at the end. So they're doing themselves no favor with this schedule, but they just need to show us that they can play competitive basketball against good teams.
Yeah, by the way, I just looking, we were talking about all the 95-99% in their non-con schedule as far as predictions, whether they're going to win them in KenPom.
Yeah.
I just noticed the prediction on Jackson State is now only 86%.
Boy.
That's fallen a little bit, actually.
Yeah.
That's concerned. Boy, I certainly hope they don't lose a bye game. But we'll talk about that hopefully not on the next podcast. But again, I'm just really kind of hoping something takes a step positive, like you said, Phil. And who knows? Two games can totally change our perspective on everything. We could be celebrating a week from now if they go to New York and shockingly win 2 games, which, youth can have a way of surprising you sometimes. So maybe something amazing happens and we have a Thanksgiving miracle and they win 2 games and maybe LSU shows its youth for the first time on Monday.
Yeah,
I'm not counting on it, but...
Yeah, to be fair to Marquette and the matchup, LSU has 3 wins, yes, but they're against the 247th, 336th, and 329th rated teams in the country. So they haven't exactly played our schedule either.
No, that's true. They haven't beaten any... Like, really, the Legends Classic are really... That's the... That's, I mean, that by far are going to be the best teams... LSU really plays in the entire, almost in its entire non-conference schedule.
Correct.
The only team in its non-conference schedule, other than, Marquette's not in the top 100 anymore. The only team in its non-conference schedule right now that's in the top 100 is Wake Forest. Now, I guess maybe Arizona State and NC State. I'm not seeing them on the schedule because it's not officially a game yet. But yeah, LSU's non-conference schedule actually is pretty weak. So they haven't really played anyone. They beat McNeese State by 11. They blew out Kennesaw State, who's one of the worst teams in the country. And then they beat South Alabama by 12. So it's not Ben Simmons' numbers have been amazing, but hopefully Marquette will provide a much stiffer test than those three teams did to LSU.
Agreed.
Well, we're just gonna keep our fingers crossed, Phil. They don't call him the best analyst in the league for nothing, folks.
Yeah,
but we're just gonna keep our fingers crossed, and you know, maybe LSU will show its youth, and Marquette can turn things around, and then we can hopefully have a positive to look at as we kind of look at this team going forward and see if they can eat, you know, make this season as exciting as we once hoped it would be. It's just too bad because in the small sample size we have, it's just
depressing.
Not much to look at, right?
Well, the question is, can we afford to ship with our KenPom sponsorship, apparently, can we afford to ship Prozac with every one of these podcasts people download?
No, but if Prozac wants to get on board as a sponsor, we could talk about that.
Shameless endorsement time.
Just throwing that out there. As always, we hope we thank you for commiserating with us here on Scrambled Eggs. We hope we have provided some kind of levity to your disappointment with the team. I think it's hopefully been long enough, and maybe hopefully they surprise us with at least one win in New York this week. As always, you can give us your feedback on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. You can hit up the team page on Twitter as well. They are Crack Sidewalks. We post the podcast on cracksidewalks.com. You can leave your comments there or on our Facebook page. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where we post all the podcasts. And, of course, download us on iTunes. Take us anywhere you go. Phil, I hope you get some sleep this week, and I hope the lack of sleep is not caused by Marquette basketball.
Yeah, I hope I can get some sleep as well so I can enjoy what will be two victories by Marquette, right? I mean, it just has to be.
That's optimistic, but go Marquette. We're trying to stay positive. Hope they prove us wrong and silence all the haters like us who don't think they're very good. But until next week, have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Seashells and balloons.